The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, well, welcome to the New World Order, such as it is. We are now one step closer to Gilead, and perhaps today is the day I begin reading The Handmaid's Tale, because frankly, I'm not quite sure what else to do. There are protests already happening today everywhere, and of course, the weekend is now here. But as we knew was coming, the Supreme Court today, overturned Roe v. Wade. Overturned how many 50 years of settled law. And what should have happened, I believe, is that perjury charges should have been filed against at least two sitting Supreme Court justices, starting with Neil Gorsuch, who said this during his Joy, call back in a minute. I'm not taking calls yet. Who said this during the confirmation hearings? Great. Now it's not working. Of course it's not working. Because of course it's not working. God damn it.
The president said that he would appoint someone who would overturn Roe. You pointed out to me that you viewed precedent in a serious way, in that it added stability to the law. Could you elaborate on the point that you made in my office on that?
Part of the value of precedent, it has lots of value. It has value in and of itself because it's our history. And our history has value intrinsically. But it also has an instrumental value in this sense. It adds to the determinacy of law. We have lots of tools that allow us to narrow the realm of admissible dispute between parties so that people can anticipate and organize their affairs. It's part of the reason why the rule of law in this country works so well. We have statutes, we have rules, we have a fact-finding process and a judicial system that's the envy of the world. And precedent is a key part of that because, as the chairman pointed out when he quoted a piece of mine, once a case is settled, that adds to the determinacy of the law. What was once a hotly contested issue is no longer a hotly contested issue. We move forward. And Senator, the value of that is the United States Supreme Court takes something like 70 or 80 cases a year. That is a tiny fraction of all the disputes in our federal legal system. Right? My law clerks tell me it's something like 0.001%.
This is Neil Gorsuch again,
unanimous
in case you're just joining
in those
us.
Cases, which have divided circuit judges. That's why Supreme Court largely takes the case, because it's divided us. It's one of the rare cases where we disagree. They're unanimous 40% of the time.
One other question.
Sure.
Do you view Roe as having super precedent?
Hello.
Well, Senator, a super precedent is a...
In numbers.
It has been reaffirmed many times. I can say that. Yes.
Yes. Yes, it has. Okay. How about Kavanaugh? You know, he likes to drink beer, right? Kavanaugh.
Fourth orbit satellite.
The first question I have of you is, what do you mean by settled law? I tried to ask earlier, do you believe it is correct law? Have your views on whether Roe is settled precedent or could be overturned? And has your views changed since you were in the Bush White House?
Senator, I said that it's settled as a precedent of the Supreme Court entitled to respect under principles of stare decisis.
Liar!
One of the important things to keep in mind about Roe v. Wade is that it has been reaffirmed many times
over the past
45 years.
Yes, it has.
As you know. And... most prominently, most importantly, reaffirmed in Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992.
Yes, it has.
And as you well recall, Senator, I know when that case came up, the Supreme Court didn't just reaffirm it in passing. The court specifically went through all the factors of stare decisis in considering whether to overrule it. And the joint opinion of Justice Kennedy, Justice O'Connor, and Justice Souter at great length went through those factors. That was the question presented in the case.
Yeah.
Could I interrupt you to say, since you mentioned stare decisis, and I sat on 9 of these hearings, and when the subject comes up, the person says, I will follow stare decisis. And they get confirmed, and then, of course, they don't. So I think knowing going into it, how you make a judgment on these issues is really important to our vote as whether to support you or not. Because I don't want to go back to those death tolls in this country. And I truly believe that women should be able to control their own reproductive systems.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Obviously, some concern for a viable fetus.
Mm-hmm. And I understand your point of view on that, Senator, and I understand how passionate and how deeply people feel about this issue. I understand the importance of the issue. I understand the importance that people attach to the Roe v. Wade decision, to the Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision.
Oh, God,
decision.
He's just punchable.
I don't live in a bubble. I understand. I live in the real world.
Oh,
I understand the importance of the issue.
He understands the importance of the issue. He lied. He lied in his confirmation hearing under oath, as did Brett Gorsuch. I'll tell you what, going back and listening, Amy Coney Barrett didn't lie. These idiots in the Senate confirmed her despite giving this as an answer.
If I express a view on a precedent one way or another, whether I say I love it or I hate it, it signals to litigants that I might tilt one way or another in a pending case.
So on something that is really a major cause with major effect on over half of the population of this country, who are women, after all, it's distressing not to get a straight answer. So let me try again. Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe was wrongly decided?
I'm not going to say anything.
Senator, I understand why you're asking, but I'm not going to answer your question. Pre-commit or say, yes, I'm going in with some agenda because I'm not.
Then don't confirm her. She was in a stolen seat to begin with, as was Brett Kavanaugh. I'm sorry, as was Neil Gorsuch, all of them. Deep breath. Well, at least we know that we have those House Democrats on the job because they took immediate action, don't you know? Immediate action. You saw what they did today, didn't you? You're going to be so proud. So proud. Because what they did was, let me just pull up the video. I thought I had pulled it, but nothing is working today because, frankly, I'm so angry that I'm physically shaking. You don't even want to know. And if my eyes look swollen, yes, I've been crying all day today because this country has become everything we were afraid it would. So our House Democrats, what did they do? They walked out to the Capitol steps and they sang. They sang. I just have to play this for you because you won't believe your ears. Oh, hold on. I got it started at the beginning. Here we go. This is what our House Democrats did.
To the prairies, to the oceans, white with
fire. They sang God Bless America.
God bless America, my home sweet home.
That's what they did. Oh, shut up. That's what the House Democrats did today. Now, got to give her credit. Before she launched into a poem, I'm not kidding. Before she launched into a poem, whoops, Nancy Pelosi actually, sorry, Amy Coney Barrett still going off on here. All right. Before she launched into a poem, Nancy Pelosi got up to the microphone and actually said a few worthwhile things.
Front game, but behind it, and for years I have seen in this Congress opposition to any family planning, domestic or global, when we have had those discussions and those debates and those votes on the floor of the House. This is deadly serious, but we are not going to let this pass.
No? Well, maybe we
should
go sing.
A woman's right to choose, reproductive freedom, is on the ballot in November. We cannot allow them to take charge so that they can institute their goal, which is to criminalize reproductive freedom.
Yeah.
To criminalize it. Right now, they're saying in states that they can arrest doctors and all the rest.
Yeah.
What is happening here? What is happening here? A woman's fundamental health decisions are her own to make in consultation with her doctor, her faith, her family, not some right-wing politicians of Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell pack the court with. While Republicans seek to punish and control women, Democrats will keep fighting ferociously to enshrine Roe v. Wade into law of the land. This cruel ruling is outrageous and heart-wrenching, but make no mistake, again, it's all on the ballot in November.
Yeah. But it's been
Supreme
on the
Court
ballot.
Has ended a constitutional
and
right. This is
yes, it has. And Nancy
years.
Pelosi, you know what? You're saying some good things here, but let me give you some fucking reality. Nancy Pelosi went to Texas along with Steny Hoyer and probably Jim Clyburn too, to campaign for Ruben Cuellar. Cuellar, the anti-choice member of the Democratic House Caucus. He had a great opponent in Jessica Cisneros, who was pro-choice and anti-gun. Henry Cuellar. Henry Cuellar, anti-choice. He was in favor of what happened today. Oh, and also pro-gun. So he's thrilled about what the Supreme Court did yesterday. Nancy Pelosi put her every being on the line to support that piece of shit. That's why we're where we are. But forget, Nancy, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Keep going with your holier-than-thou bullshit.
Years proclaimed a constitutional right. What happened today was historic in many respects. Historic in that it had not granted, recognized a constitutional right, and then reversed it. This is a first. And again, just before it imposed a constitutional right to allow for concealed weapons.
And you again went and campaigned for the member of your caucus who's all in favor of carrying those concealed weapons and making sure you or your kid can't get an abortion. Nancy Pelosi, you can't have it both ways.
How about those justices
How
coming
about
before
them?
The senators and saying that they respected, sorry to say, the precedent of the court, that they respected the right of privacy in the Constitution of the United States. Did you hear that? Were they not telling the truth then?
What about Henry
Again.
Cuellar, Nancy? Answer us, please. You hypocrite.
Just getting to the gun
you
issue.
You fucking hypocrite!
Really, in preparation for this morning, I was really in an exalted state about what happened in the United States Senate yesterday. Counterpoint to the dangerous decision of this Trumpian Supreme Court that they made yesterday.
All right, I can't listen to this woman anymore. Here's what I'm going to do. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, in about 15 minutes, we're going to hear from David Dayen, who's one of the best journalists out there today. These days, he's executive editor of the American Prospect at prospect.org, where you should be reading every day because they're doing good work, really, really good work. This morning, instead of my regular What's News, I chose instead to read from the dissent written by the three so-called liberals on the court. I would have shared some of it with you, but of course my file got lost in today's insanity. But I do have it on tape. So for a while, until you get the idea, for the next 13 minutes or so, here's the dissent. Here's what the Supreme Court justices, the only three valid ones in my opinion, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, this was their dissent. It's time for a special edition of What's News, because nothing about what happened today is normal. Friday, June 24th, 2022, the United States Supreme Court overturned a woman's right to
January,
choose
June.
What happens with her body. In a 6-3 ruling in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, the stacked right-wing majority on the Supreme Court overturned 50 years of settled law. Today, I will not share with you anything from the majority opinion. I'll post the text of the entire thing on the What's News page at NicoleSandler.com. And I'll share with you a major excerpt from the dissent written by the three so-called liberal justices, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. For half a century, Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey have protected the liberty and equality of women. Roe held and Casey reaffirmed that the Constitution safeguards a woman's right to decide for herself whether to bear a child. Roe held and Casey reaffirmed that in the first stages of pregnancy, the government cannot make that choice for women. The government could not control a woman's body or the course of a woman's life. It could not determine what the woman's future would be. Respecting a woman as an autonomous being and granting her full equality meant giving her substantial choice over this most personal and most consequential of all life decisions. Roe and Casey well understood the difficulty and divisiveness of the abortion issue. The court knew that Americans hold profoundly different views about the, quote, morality of terminating a pregnancy, even in its earliest stage. And the court recognized, quote, that the state has legitimate interests from the outset of the pregnancy in protecting the life of the fetus that may become a child. So the court struck a balance, as it often does when values and goals compete. It held that the state could prohibit abortions after fetal viability, so long as the ban contained exceptions to safeguard a woman's life or health. It held that even before viability, the state could regulate the abortion procedure in multiple and meaningful ways. But until the viability line was crossed, the court held, the state could not impose a substantial obstacle on a woman's right to elect the procedure as she, not the government, thought proper in light of all the circumstances and complexities of her own life. Today, the court discards that balance. It says that from the very moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. A state can force her to bring a pregnancy to term, even at the steepest personal and familial costs. An abortion restriction, the majority holds, is permissible whenever rational, the lowest level of scrutiny known to the law. And because, as the court has often stated, protecting fetal life is rational, states will feel free to enact all manner of restrictions. The Mississippi law at issue here bars abortions after the 15th week of pregnancy. Under the majority's ruling, though, another state's law could do so after 10 weeks, or 5, or 3, or 1. Or again, from the moment of fertilization. States have already passed such laws in anticipation of today's ruling. More will follow. Some states have enacted laws extending to all forms of abortion procedure, including taking medication in one's own home. They have passed laws without any exceptions for when the woman is the victim of rape or incest. Under those laws, a woman will have to bear her rapist child, or a young girl, her father's, no matter if doing so will destroy her life. So too, after today's ruling, some states may compel women to carry to term a fetus with severe
physical anomalies. For example, one afflicted with Tay-Sachs disease, sure to die within a few years of birth. States may even argue that a prohibition on abortion need make no provision for protecting a woman from risk of death or physical harm. Across a vast array of circumstances, a state will be able to impose its moral choice on a woman and coerce her to give birth to a child. Enforcement of all these draconian restrictions will also be left largely to the state's devices. A state can, of course, impose criminal penalties on abortion providers, including lengthy prison sentences. But some states will not stop there. Perhaps, in the wake of today's decision, a state law will criminalize the woman's conduct too, incarcerating or fining her for daring to seek or obtain an abortion. And as Texas has recently shown, a state can turn neighbor against neighbor, enlisting fellow citizens in the effort to root out anyone who tries to get an abortion or to assist another in doing so. The majority tries to hide the geographically expansive effects of its holding. Today's decision, the majority says, permits, quote, each state to address abortion as it pleases. That is cold comfort, of course, for the poor woman who cannot get the money to fly to a distant state for a procedure. Above all, women lacking financial resources will suffer from today's decision. In any event, interstate restrictions will also soon be in the offing. After this decision, some states may block women from traveling out of state to obtain abortions or even from receiving abortion medications from out of state. Some may criminalize efforts, including the provision of information or funding to help women gain access to other states' abortion services. Most threatening of all, no language in today's decision stops the federal government from prohibiting abortions nationwide. Once again, from the moment of conception and without exceptions for rape or incest. If that happens, the views of citizens will not matter. The challenge for a woman will be to finance a trip not to New York or California, but to Toronto. Whatever the exact scope of the coming laws, one result of today's decision is certain: the curtailment of women's rights and of their status as free and equal citizens. Yesterday, the Constitution guaranteed that a woman confronted with an unplanned pregnancy could, within reasonable limits, make her own decision about whether to bear a child, with all the life-transforming consequences that act involves. And in thus safeguarding each woman's reproductive freedom, the Constitution also protected the ability of women to participate equally in economic and social life. But no longer. As of today, this court holds, a state can always force a woman to give birth, prohibiting even the earliest abortions. A state can thus transform what, when freely undertaken, is a wonder into what, when forced, may be a nightmare. Some women, especially women of means, will find out money or childcare or the ability to take time off from work will not be so fortunate. Maybe they will try an unsafe method of abortion and come to physical harm or even die. Maybe they will undergo pregnancy and have a child, but at significant personal or familial cost. At the least, they will incur the cost of losing control over their lives. The Constitution will, today's majority holds, provide no shield, despite its guarantees of liberty and equality for all. And no one should be confident that this majority is done with its work. The right, Roe and Casey recognized, does not stand alone. To the contrary, the court has linked it for decades to other settled freedoms involving bodily integrity, familial relationships, and procreation. Most obviously, the right to terminate a pregnancy arose straight out of the right to purchase and use contraception. In turn, those rights led more recently to rights of same-sex intimacy and marriage. They are all part of the same constitutional fabric, protecting autonomous decision-making over the most personal of life's decisions. The majority, or to be more accurate, most of it, is eager to tell us today that nothing it does casts doubt on precedents that do not concern abortion. But how could that be? The lone rationale for what the majority does today is that the right to elect an abortion is not, quote, deeply rooted in history. Not until Roe, the majority argues, did people think abortion fell within the Constitution's guarantee of liberty. The same could be said, though, of most of the rights the majority claims it is not tampering with. The majority could write just as long as an opinion showing, for example, that until the mid-20th century, quote, there was no support in American law for a constitutional right to obtain contraceptives. So one of two things must be true. Either the majority does not really believe its own reasoning, or if it does, all rights that have no history stretching back to the mid-19th century are insecure. Either the mass of the majority's opinion is hypocrisy, or additional constitutional rights are under threat. It is one or the other. One piece of evidence on that score seems especially salient. The majority's cavalier approach to overturning this court's precedents. Stare decisis is a Latin phrase for a foundation stone of the rule of law. That things decided should stay decided until there is a very good reason for change. It is a doctrine of judicial modesty and humility. Those qualities are not evident in today's opinion. The majority has no good reason for the upheaval in law and society it sets off. Roe and Casey have been the law of the land for decades, shaping women's expectations of their choices when an unplanned pregnancy occurs. Women have relied on the availability of abortion, both in structuring their relationships and in planning their lives. The legal framework Roe and Casey developed to balance the competing interests in this sphere has proved workable in courts across the country. No recent developments in either law or fact have eroded or cast doubt on those precedents. Nothing, in short, has changed. Indeed, the court in Casey already found all of that to be true. Casey is a precedent about precedent. It reviewed the same arguments made here in support of overruling Roe, and it found that doing so was not warranted. The court reverses course today for one reason and one reason only, because the composition of this court has changed. Stare decisis, this court has often said, contributes to the actual and perceived integrity of the judicial process by ensuring that decisions are founded in the law rather than in the proclivities of individuals. Today, the proclivities of individuals rule. The court departs from its obligation to faithfully and impartially apply the law. We dissent. And they go on from there, writing in great detail about everything that's wrong with this opinion and what could happen next. In fact, as predicted by the dissent, Clarence Thomas wrote in a concurring opinion that the Supreme Court should reconsider Griswold, Lawrence, and Obergefell, the rulings that now protect our rights to contraception, same-sex relationships, and same-sex marriage. Watch out. This is Gilead. And boy, do we have our work cut out for us. And now you understand why every vote matters. This has been a special edition of What's News. So that's what I put out today. That's the extended What's News. I didn't get through the entire dissent because it went on for more pages. That was the bulk of it, though. That was the main thrust of it. Beautifully written, painstakingly sensible by the sensible people on the court, Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan. Stephen Breyer, somebody in the chat room asked, when does he leave? Well, once these remaining, I think there are still 11 cases for them to opine on that will be released next week. But they got the biggies out of the way. They made sure that anybody who wants to carry a gun anywhere, concealed, can do so. You can be at a movie. You could be at the beach. You can be in church. You can be in school. And somebody could have a gun on their person because this these right wingers on the Supreme Court interpreted the Second Amendment to mean that, well, to reinforce the bad interpretation by Heller in the Heller case, that that the Second Amendment gives anyone a right to have arms in their home. These idiots said, oh, not only in their home, but on their person, wherever they may go. That's what they said. Unbelievable. That's what they said. So now you're not safe anywhere except, I guess, in your own home, as long as nobody breaks in to kill you. And, you know, they took those decisions away from the states because states' rights, who needs states' rights? But in this case, they sent it back to the states saying states' rights. It's all about states' rights. One way or the other, you hypocritical fucks. This is what we're dealing with today. And yes, I spent most of the day crying too. And I'll tell you, I held it together. Here's what happened. And I keep looking over here because I'm waiting for David Day in, and I'm sure this is an incredibly busy day for him. We had scheduled him for the show today at the beginning of the week. I said, what day is good for you? And he said, Friday. I could do Friday. Obviously not thinking that our whole world would change on this Friday. All right, I guess I'll take some phone calls before we get David Day in on the line. From the 630 area code, who's this? Maybe nobody. Hello? Oh, speakers. Hold on, 630. I forgot I muted the speakers. Give me 1 second. I got to unmute them. Hold on. I will unmute you. Here we go. Okay, 630, you there? Hello? Okay, now I know they're there because I can hear sound, but they're not answering me. All right, we'll go to another call. This is them again. Hi, who's this? Hello? Okay.
Hello?
Yes, that's you. Hi, who is this?
Hi, it's Gregory from Downers Grove.
I'm sorry. Say again, somebody from Downers Grove?
Gregory.
Gregory. Yeah. Hi, Gregory.
Hi, sister from another mister. You know, this is totally disgusting, and it's really about to screw us all up. You know, it's, you know, as black man, I feel like, you know, this is, they're just like putting everything in reverse and going back to, but it's going to be white sharecroppers again.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, I know.
Shareholders.
Yeah. Yes. Back to the dark ages. It's sending us back to the dark ages, which is where they want us. I guess women are supposed to be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 1830 again.
Yeah, right.
What, make America great again or whatever you want to say is one or the other.
Make America
but
suck
I appreciate
again.
All the work you're doing. I just wanted to shout you out.
Well, thank you very much, Gregory. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Hey, when you call in, remember, number one, I don't have a screener. So when I answer the phone, we're on the air. So be listening through the phone, not through your computer or your radio stream, however you're listening to the show, because there is a very slight delay. It's slight, but there's a delay nonetheless. There's that. Yeah, the roaring 20s. Look, we're all kind of freaked out right about now, and rightly so. And, you know, what a day it's been. So I woke up this morning, as usual, was up way too early, because Jackson, who you just heard, gets me up early, and he needed to go out and eat. So we did all that. And then I came in here to get to work, and it wasn't even 7 o'clock yet, and I thought, I'm going to close my eyes for an hour, because I know what's coming. I had a feeling it was coming today. We didn't know for sure, but had a feeling it was coming today. And woke up, and the clock said, that it was, you know, 10:20. I'm like, oh shit, 10:20.
And I came in here to get to work.
Hi, whoever this is in the 310, turn the radio down. I give you one more chance. Nope. Okay. Sorry, I don't want to hear myself. Joy, hi.
Actually, this is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Yeah, amid all the discussion and rage we've got, there's one thing we need to keep in mind. This November is it. We've got to get a blue tsunami going. because if we don't, they're going to seize control of the national election process.
Yep.
And we need to get a control of Congress this fall, or we're not going to be able to later. I have this horrible feeling.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Everybody keep that in mind.
You're absolutely right. Everything. Look, and this is almost, thanks, Tom. Great reminder. This is sort of like, you know, the boy who cried wolf, right? Because for the last, well, shit, as long as I've been dealing in this realm of electoral, of politics, we've always heard this is the most important election of our lifetime. And it always has been. But this one goes even further. If you don't vote and vote these obstructionists, these horrible Republicans out of office, then it's on you. 310 area code. Hi, who's this?
Is it Lynn?
That's you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, hear you now.
Okay. All right. Great. Okay. Thank you for your show.
Who's this?
I want to be positive, and
okay.
I want to look at this devastating decision as a gift from the supreme extremists, in that it wakes people up. It gives me a talking point when I talk to voters, and I can say to them, vote for a Democrat to save us from the Supreme Court, who want to focus on this thing that everybody should start talking about called the non-delegation doctrine. The non-delegation doctrine started with FDR when he created the different agencies, you know, like OSHA and the Labor Board and EPA. The Supreme Court wants to get rid of all those things using the non-delegation doctrine. So a guy named Samuel Moyne from Yale University has three great ideas I wanted to share, if I could.
Okay.
Idea number one, jurisdiction stripping. Congress can say how many court justices can rule. So in other words, instead of five out of, you know, majority, simple majority, Congress can say, no, it should be 9 out of 9 or 7 out of 9. We're going to set the number of yes votes required to change any kind of legislation. That was a great idea. Second, legislative override. Congress writes a law like the Women's Healthy Protection Act that only missed passing by one vote. We pass a law like that, and at the end of it, instead of just leaving the law as is, attach a rider that says the Supreme Court may not rule on this. And in order to do these really great things that can take the power away from the court, we do need to mobilize. We need to get the voters out. And I think this is the way to do it, if we can figure out a way of making these abstract concepts very simple and clear. And the last thing I wanted to say before I let you go, I know you got to... time is of the essence.
No. Oh, well, he's here now.
Ruby.
So, yes, quickly. Yeah. Lady Ruby.
I want to make a T-shirt. I want to design a T-shirt and wear it and that says, I heart Lady Ruby. We all need to love her. She needs the love. Okay, that's all. Thank you, Nicole.
Okay, Lynn, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. All right. Well, it's great hearing from you guys. But as you know, I told you we have a guest coming up, and I'm glad he's here. I know it's a crazy day. So David Dayan, executive editor of the American Prospect at prospect.org. What am I? Oh, okay. Somehow, hold on. We're still hearing the video for some reason. I got it mute. Where's it? Oh, I know where it's coming from. Bear with me 1 second, Dave. That was the great reaction by our Congress, by our Democratic members of the House of Representatives, how they responded to this news was by going on the Capitol steps and singing God Bless America. So, you know, they're on the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good response, like, to an audition for The Voice.
Wow.
But not really for this moment.
Right. Talk about tone deaf and what did not reading the room. I mean, what the hell? And then after today, they go off on recess for 2 weeks. Now, I've been saying vacation because the CY has been added back to my name. I'm now Cynical Sandler, not just Nicole. And, you know, so it's not vacation. I get it. Someone chastised me on a list I'm on. Well, they need to campaign, and right now we need them to campaign. They're going to be off the whole month of August campaigning. Right now, after this happens with the Supreme Court on two big issues, they kill Roe and they say, concealed carry, sure. They go home, they leave.
I'm well, apoplectic today.
To be frank, the House isn't the problem, right? I mean, the House passed a codification of Roe just a matter of months ago.
That's true.
The Senate tried and they failed. So we know where everybody is on this. I mean, I guess it wouldn't hurt for the Senate to try again, but I can't count to 60 on that.
No.
And we're not allowed to count to 50 because we don't have majority rule in this country. We have minority rule.
Right. And we also have two obstructionists in the Senate and the Democratic.
Prevent us from actually having a democracy. So,
right.
What the Congress can do is a little bit limited, but what the executive branch can do is less so. I mean, these are some of the things that we're thinking about reporting on ourselves at the Prospect. First of all, the largest abortion provider in this country is the United States Postal Service. Over 50% of all abortions are medical abortions, and a large segment of those are issued, you know, through pills through the mail.
Yep.
And there are a number of states that are attempting in one way or another to prevent that. And I can't see how, if a mailer, someone who mails RU-386, which are FDA-approved pills, is complying with all the rules and regulations, and they are received through the federal mail service, I'm trying to figure out how that can be abridged in any way.
Hmm.
Now, the way that a lot of these states do it is say, well, you can't do that through the mail without an in-person health visit. But there are certainly options, online options, telehealth options, where people can get the services that they need,
the
medical care that they need. So, I mean, these are the fights to come. And that's just one of many examples of the fights to come. This is not a situation where pro-lifers are going to have a party and go home. They are going to seek a national ban on abortion. They are going to try to figure out ways in the meantime to criminalize interstate travel, to criminalize the use of the federal mail service, to criminalize just a whole host of options that women have when they want to make their own choice. So there is a new battleground today in America. That's something that's going to be our interest over the next several weeks.
Without a doubt. You know, we saw this coming. I mean, we've known for a couple of weeks, at least since the draft was leaked. But for years, I don't know if you actually said it, but we'd all been saying, well, this is their money raiser. This is their fundraising thing. The powers that be don't actually want to overturn Roe v. Wade. This is their cash cow. This is how they raise most of their funds. We never thought they were actually going to do it. And now
I do agree that there was a lot of complacency, particularly elite complacency, around this idea based on, you know, somewhat on what you were saying. We ran a piece today reminding people that in 2014, which turns out to be one of the more consequential elections in history, because if Democrats kept the Senate that year, then Antonin Scalia would have been replaced by Merrick Garland, who, I mean, we aren't all in love with right now, but he would have been a reliable vote in this case, you would think. And we might not have the same situation. Justice Ginsburg having the foresight to retire when we knew there would be a Democrat in the White House is another matter. But anyway, in 2014, Mark Udall, do you remember Senator Mark Udall of Colorado?
Sure.
He stressed throughout his campaign against Cory Gardner that abortion was on the line. Abortion was on the ballot, that if he lost, then the chances would be much greater that abortion rights would be lost. Uh-huh. And he was in the media. One of the descriptions for him, the nicknames for him, was Mark Uterus.
Right.
Like, you're talking too much about abortion. You look ridiculous. Why? This isn't a problem. Roe is a settled law. What's with you? And so Mark Udall goes on to lose to Cory Gardner. Cory Gardner votes in the affirmative for all three of Trump's justices. And those three form the backbone of the ruling that we see today. So there was a tremendous amount of complacency about whether this day would ever come. And there continues to be complacency about what will happen from here on out, some of which, you know, we talked about earlier.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm frantically looking for a photo that I know I have in here of a campaign button that I picked up at an event back in 2012. The only one I can find on such short notice is one that I photoshopped and I changed below where it said Obama 2012. But this is a button from the 2012 election. It's from People for the American Way, and it says, "It's the Supreme Court, stupid," and it said Obama 2012. I've held on to that for all these years because I knew that we blew that. And I refashioned it, you know, in 2020, not that it did us any good, but that's the thing. The Republicans knew it was all about the Supreme Court. Why couldn't our side get that message across? I mean, it's so easy to look back. Hindsight is 2020, but it seems like the Democrats screwed up on so many fronts. And I know now's not the time to assign blame. Now's the time to think, what do we do going forward? But I can't help thinking, my God, did we screw up?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to make those considerations in this moment. You second guess and think all of the turns and twists, some of which we talked about, whether it was Ginsburg or the Scalia situation. You know, you start thinking about that.
Yep.
And it's natural.
Yep.
It does us little good at this point.
Right.
We had another piece up today by Heather Booth.
Uh-huh.
And Heather Booth is a longtime activist in many other realms. But in the late 1960s, she, at the University of Chicago, while just out of college, founded a group called the Jane Collective. And the Jane Collective was a group that performed illegal abortions prior to Roe in a sort of secretive way, 11,000 abortions for women in the Chicago area over a several year period. It's a remarkable story. And her message today was that these fights are enduring. And you can step back and say, what could we have done better and how can we improve? But these fights there is no end. There's no end date where everything gets settled and we can move on and be happy with ourselves. I mean, this is right now, America stands as the only country that has backslid on its abortion rights in the last 30 some years. So the idea that something is impossible today is the reality that nothing is impossible and things can get worse if you get demoralized.
And so, things can get worse if you take Clarence Thomas at his word in his concurrence. He wrote, right? He's now going directly after contraception rights, same-sex marriage relationships as well.
Well, and let me say that at least Clarence Thomas is honest because the plain reading of what is in Alito's opinion, which is substantially pretty much identical to what was leaked a month and a half ago.
Yeah,
so we know
changed.
What's in the opinion. We've been reading it for 6 weeks. The plain logic of what Alito said leads you to Thomas's conclusion. Alito tried in his opinion to say, oh, well, this is really only about abortion rights and it has nothing to do with contraception. It has nothing to do with gay rights. It has nothing to do with this other stuff. But the right that he says is not available in the Constitution is the same right upon which all of those other rulings are based.
Mm-hmm.
It's in, you know, you're getting it from the 14th Amendment. You're
That's
getting
right.
it from the right to privacy. So there is no way to disassociate this ruling in Dobbs from the rulings in Griswold and Obergefell and Lawrence versus Texas and just all these other rulings. There's no way to disassociate them logically.
Yep.
Now, the Supreme Court doesn't really go for logic, right? I mean, they will invent things in the Constitution when it suits them, and they will say that they're not there when it also suits them. Literally today in Kavanaugh's, in his concurrence, he says, well, you know, there is this constitutional right to interstate travel. That's not in the text. Like, by the way that you guys talk about the Constitution and how everything has to be written in there specifically, there is no constitutional right to interstate travel. You just made that up to try to build a wall against the ramifications of this particular ruling.
Right.
And, you know, there are already 6 votes, so they could lose one of them and still find their way to follow the logic train that they've sent themselves on. And so all of these things are at risk.
Yes.
And they don't cease to be at risk because we disengage, right? I mean, like,
no.
There's that old saying that you may not be interested in politics, but politics is interesting.
Sure.
And it's going to continue to be. So, you know, it's a really dissatisfying answer to say, well, now's the time to fight. But it is. I mean, there's no alternative.
There is no alternative. You know, one aside that I found interesting, since Thomas is the one who brought up, you know, Obergefell these other precedents that were decided on the same basis that Roe was. The one he left out was Loving versus Virginia, which says interracial couples can't be. And, you know, he's got a white wife. So, you know, they're
right.
Good old Clarence Thomas making sure he's taken care of, but screw everybody else. It's more hypocrisy.
Situational ethics all the way down.
All the way.
This court. I mean, they, you know, the juxtaposition of today's ruling that says we could not find a particularized right, so we're going to take away from you the right to make your own medical choice. And yesterday's ruling in the New York gun case, where they say, well, we did find this very particularized right, not just to own a gun, but to carry it publicly in a concealed manner, in the manner that we see fit. They went hunting and found that in the Constitution, but they couldn't find that which allows abortion rights
right.
to sustain.
And yet they still have, there must be 4 words blacked out on their copies of the Constitution, because every time I open it up and I open to the Second Amendment, I see a well-regulated militia.
Right.
Which they ignore. You can just ignore passages at will? I guess they can. So,
yeah, because the way that our system is set up, we have 9 unelected people who are more powerful and responsible for more policymaking than the vast majority of most politicians. And in fact, probably the most powerful elected or not elected, the most powerful policymaking official in the United States is a guy named Leonard Leo, who is the vice president or was the longtime vice president of the Federal Society, and who ran, bankrolled, hand-selected and dictated the Supreme Court nomination campaigns of five of the six Supreme Court justices who put this majority opinion together. So this guy is apparently nobody elected him. Nobody said Leonard Leo should dictate and direct our policy, but he's in charge. He's large and in charge, and he has been for some time and will continue to be. And that should trigger a rethinking of the entire manner in which we have set this up, this government that we have. We should be thinking about the whole concept of having this final authority in a manner that it's not that it can't be contradicted and checked by the legislative, but because of the cockamamie way that we have put a straitjacket around majority rule in the legislative arena, it effectively can't. And that imbues the Supreme Court with this fantastical amount of power.
You know, David Dan, I'm so grateful to you for being here today. As I told the listeners, we set this up at the beginning of the week. We had no idea what today was going to be, and it turned out to be this ridiculously crazy news day. And I so appreciate you joining us, because I'm sure you're up to your ears in the proverbial alligator. So thank you so much. I was going to ask another question of which form of government is more insane, ours or, for instance, what's going on in Israel, where they're going to have their fifth presidential or prime minister election in 4 years. But you know what? They're all nuts. They're all crazy. It's like every person for himself right now, and we got to concentrate on figuring out how we survive this. So I'm just going to thank you so much for being here and know that you've got to be nuts today, and let you go with my gratitude.
Well, thank you very much, Nicole.
Really, really appreciate it. You too. All right. Thanks so much for your work. And thanks. And everybody, you should be reading prospect.org. Let me tell you something about them. There's no paywall there. Much the way I work, they survive based on your donations, your subscriptions. But it's voluntary. You can read everything in that magazine at prospect.org. And you don't have to pay a dime, because they know there are people hurting like us. I can't afford to have a subscription to every newspaper or magazine I want to read. And I certainly can't afford to pay for any radio show I want to listen to. And you know, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I just don't. I don't have time. But that's besides the point. The American Prospect is consistently one of the best news publications out there. And they're doing it on the honor system. If you can afford to support them, they really need your help. Same goes for me. But if you can't, take in the information and share it. Use it. We're not going to preclude you from listening or reading, but amplify the message, because right now it is all hands on deck. We are so screwed, and not in any good way at all. So that's where we are. And now it's the weekend. There are going to be marches and protests everywhere. I'm supposed to go do an event tomorrow in Fort Lauderdale to, you know, display my paintings and artworks and hopefully sell some of them at the Riverside Hotel in Fort Lauderdale on Las Olas from 2 to 5. But it does make me a little nervous to say that that's where I'm going to be, because there are fucking crazy people out there. And now they can walk in carrying a gun without breaking the law. A hidden gun without breaking the law. So I say live your life. And if some crazed person decides to come after me because of my views, politicize the hell out of it. Don't let anybody tell you now's not the time. It's exactly the time. This country is going down the shitter. And if I could leave, I would. Our friend Laffy is on her way to Canada as we speak. Talk about timing. They've been planning this for 3 years. Have no fear. I now live in fear But I'm not going to let the fear control me, because you got to live your life, you know? So I say have a good weekend as much as you can. Find a protest or a march. They're happening everywhere. Stand your ground. Don't let the bastards win, even though it seems like they have. And if you haven't yet started watching The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, you probably should. You should. In fact, I think I'm going to start reading the book. I've got it right here. Check this space this weekend. I may take an hour or two and start reading the first couple of chapters. All right, everybody. I'm not going to leave you with what's news, because my what's news today is my reading The Descent, unless you want me to play the shortened version of it for you again. But we already did it. So I'll just say, be good to yourself. Cry if you need to cry. I've been crying all day. It's hard to hold back the tears. It's a sad day in America. Try to keep your head up. And never stop speaking truth to power. All right. Be good. I'll see you Monday.